6 days ago with all of this.
Okay, can you tell me where you're stuck, or maybe what doesn't make sense, or elaborate a little bit more on your position?
It's all the same, Mr. Berkey. This shouldn't fall into the lap of a local police department to investigate. And if it were to, I took a step back and thought about it a little more after you and I disconnected last week. Thank you for sending me the judgment order, because that helped shed a little bit of light on some things. This case was from 2015 and got essentially adjudicated in 2017, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And was it a jury trial, or was it just trial by judge?
Well, that was the point. I was denied a trial by jury.
Okay. If this were to be your typical...
Hey, Darren, can I interrupt you for a second? Just one thing. I just want to know that I want to record this conversation, so I wanted to give you notice of that.
Okay.
All right, so go ahead. I'm sorry.
So if this were to be a crime, typically in the state of California, when we're dealing with misdemeanors and felonies, your typical felony in California, the statute of limitations is 3 years, your typical misdemeanor is 1 year. Now that can change with fraud or with homicides or sexual assaults, which none of which this is. But it looks like this case would be out of statute. It occurred 4.5 years ago. Furthermore, it's out of jurisdiction because these illegal judicial activities occurred in the city of Santa Ana. So, Santa Ana PD, if it were to go the criminal investigatory route, Santa Ana PD would be the agency of jurisdiction, or the Orange County Sheriff's Department, since they have obvious involvement with the Superior Court in the County of Orange. So, I just wanted to throw that out there. But you and I could talk more about the merits of your case, but like I said, we're still at square one in terms of this being a civil decision that you disagree with. There are some semantics issues when it comes to the damages as opposed to fines. I did think more about the venue for the quote-unquote prosecution of a business and professions code violation, but I thought back to, civil cases. The family of Nicole Brown Simpson sued OJ for wrongful death, and I mean, essentially, that's a 187 investigation that got, or 187 case that got adjudicated in civil court. So it happens quite often. But like I said, my familiarity is minimal with that type of stuff. I do have questions though. You were the one that sued the Humphreys family, and yet, the judge ruled in their favor. Therefore, that's why you have the damages attached to you. What does your attorney have to say about all of this? I mean, this issue should have been brought up right then and there, and not 4.5 years later, right?
Okay. You said a lot of things, so I took some notes. So I'm going to go point by point. Okay. Maybe a little bit out of order. Okay. There is a big difference between damages and punitive damages and a fine. And that's not semantics. Those are huge things in law. Just like it's a big difference between a penalty and restitution. Okay, so... No, everything that I'm sharing with you, I can back up with case law, whether in California or the United States Supreme Court. This is law, okay?
Like we said earlier, though, why aren't there any other attorneys that are willing to hitch their wagon to your case?
I understand, and I share in your confusion on that, but that does not change the validity of the law and what I'm sharing with you. If you looked at those cases that I sent you and the quotations that I made in the document that I sent you, it's in their own words that it's a penalty and that it's a fine. I mean, I'm not saying it, they are. And so I agree with you. I am as befuddled as you are about why attorneys won't take this on. But I have spoken with several attorneys, and a majority of them don't understand the issue, or two, they refuse to take on the issue because they do not want to challenge a judge. They told me it would be career suicide, even if I were correct. So that is the issue. That is one issue. So it's not semantics of whether the judgment order says damages or fine or not. That there are different ways. So a damage is obviously, like, let's say I ran into your car and I caused $10,000 in injury to your automobile, and let's say another $10,000 to some part of your body. So in that case, the court would award damages of $20,000, $10 to you, $10 for the car, and that's damages. It's recompense for an actual injury suffered. Okay, it's a different thing if on top of that the court says, well, Adam, you were reckless driving and that was negligent, and so because of that, I'm going to punish you $100,000. That's a punitive damage. Okay, it's a whole other thing if the court says, well, I'm just going to fine you because you violated the vehicle code, and the punishment for violating the vehicle code is, let's say, $10,000. So those are three different things that happen in law, okay? When it comes to punitive damages and fines, that's where the excessive fines clause comes in under both the California Constitution and the Constitution for the United States, okay? So if...
Well, $48,000
is excessive. Okay, well, I can share this. If you read the letter that I sent you, I put in there the criteria that the court has to go through to determine what makes a fine excessive or not. There are four criteria. One of them is that it has to be... Darren, I put it on there. They allege that I was an unlicensed contractor. That's what I did. That's the crime. Okay? If you go and look at driving without a license, the maximum fine is $250. Okay? If you go and look up Business and Professions Code 7028, that's a criminal statute for... our penal statute for violating, for contracting without a license, you'll see on there that...
It's not penal, it's PNP.
Well, that's penal. If you go look up what the definition in the penal code is, it says a crime or a public offense is in violation of a law forbidding or commanding an act upon which is annexed upon conviction a fine, death, imprisonment, whatever. So if you commit a violation of the Business and Professions Code and there is a fine or imprisonment attached to it, it's a penal offense.
Okay.
All right? So if you go and look at the maximum fine for contracting without a license under BNP 7028, the maximum fine is $5,000. Okay? So I can give you 10 cases, 10 recent cases, from the Superior Court of Orange County, and shows the 10 most recent convictions of Business and Professions Code 7028. And in each case, I think the average was the person got 7 months or 1 year of informal probation and a $700 fine. Okay, so you can, as an ordinary, rational human being, which you clearly are, otherwise you wouldn't have that job. You can see that an $848,000 fine to financially decimate someone has to be excessive and unreasonable, and it has to be cruel and unusual punishment. So if you just take into that account, there's a serious problem here, because what I've just given you is the maximum penalty, that the maximum fine that the legislature has allowed for a first-time offense of contracting without a license. That's what I allegedly did. Okay? So right away, you have to apply the excessive fines clause and the protections, all four of them. Not, so the first one is it has to be proportional to the offense. It's clearly not. Another one is that they have to take into account my ability to pay. Now, I sent you a case on that issue, which was the People v. Cowan case. Did you read that? Okay. That's it's
your
six-page
letter.
Okay. Okay. So that is why I sent you those cases, Darren, is for you to read them to understand more of the issue that I'm saying here. Okay, so I'll get to that point because that was something that you brought up. Okay, so what's that is a big.
Let me get to that point first, Adam, so that we can.
Okay.
You know, not spend too much time on the particular stuff.
Okay, there is no jurisdictional issue when it comes to making a complaint for deprivation of rights or a petition for redress of grievance. It doesn't exist. I can go under Article 1, I believe it's Section 26 or 17, whichever one the petition for redress of grievance right is. That means that I can make a complaint to any branch of government anywhere in the state of California at any time. Okay? And also in regard to your...
there's a constitutional rights violation.
Right, which is...
You're not in agreement that there's a constitutional rights violation yet.
Okay. Darren? Okay, Darren? I understand, and that's why we were going over the other subject, and you said you wanted to go to the jurisdictional issue.
So, okay,
yes, and there's also no statute of limitations on constitutional rights violations, and the actual violation of my rights is an ongoing crime. So that statute has not run because the crime has not stopped. It's currently in progress.
Okay.
Okay, and just so you know, I have made other complaints. I'll leave it at that. I'll leave it at that for right now. So we're not out of jurisdiction. We're not out of statute. And I can make a complaint to Newport Beach whether there's a nexus to the incident or not. And in fact, there is a nexus to the incident because the whole thing began in your city. Yes. Okay. So you mentioned the issue of Nicole Brown Simpson. I just want to bring that up. What the law allows sometimes is to have both a criminal prosecution and a civil trial. And what happened in this civil trial is they did not prosecute O.J. Simpson for 187. They received a claim of damages and punitive damages for his behavior. That is why it's so important to discern between a fine and incarceration, which are penalties that happen in criminal proceedings, and damages and punitive damages that are allowable in civil proceedings. The reason that there's such a differentiation between those two is because of the heightened protections that the Constitution requires in criminal proceedings versus civil proceedings. Like, there's a higher burden of proof. Obviously, proof beyond a reasonable doubt in criminal cases, and in civil cases, it's reasonable suspicion. Okay? There's also other substantive protections, like the right to know the true nature and cause of the accusation. Some civil cases may not have a right to a jury trial if it's an equity case. So it's very important to discern what the type of action is and who's bringing it. Because again, in the first part of my letter that I sent you, only the district attorney can bring claims for criminal charges against the people. Private parties cannot prosecute each other. So that's why it's important to go to the judgment order and to discern whether the judge's order was really an order for damages, meaning I caused them $848,000 in harm, And so I have to pay that back because I injured them, or whether or not that was a fine. Now, if you go to my letter, let me look at it real quick right here. I'm just looking in my scent. There was a case in there. Let's see here. There it is. It's the Eisenberg case. Did you read that part? Let's see here. It's right before it says issue 3. A recent California Court of Appeal held the following. Do you see that? Okay, so what this is a California Court of Appeal in 2020. What they said is the penalty mandated by the Business and Professions Code they charged me with is not designed to compensate the plaintiff for any harm, meaning it's not for damages. It's intended to punish the unlicensed contractor. What that means is it's either at that point got to be a punitive damage award or a fine. Okay, because damages, you have to provide evidence of how you were injured. You can't just say that so-and-so ran into my car and I had $1 million in damages.
And you wrote that you're not aware of any injury presented at the trial.
There was none. Which...
So, yeah, that would mean that the $148,000 figure is way out of whack.
Exactly.
I can't argue that right now.
I understand, and I appreciate the fact that you're looking at both sides, and I can give that information to you so that you can confirm that. But the point is right now, just I appreciate the fact that you're also taking into account that I can back up and share with you the evidence of what I'm saying. But it seems to me you're starting to see a bit about where I'm coming from now. It feels to be more clear than ever about the problem going on here. So,
yeah, I'll tell you what, it's ridiculous that, I mean, if I were in your shoes, I'd be doing the same stuff. I would, I don't want to cut you off too quick, but you had some notes you wanted to run through.
So I think I went through them. You also mentioned Station 18 and Station, what's Fountain Valley, whatever they are. Or not Fountain Valley, Santa Ana. I'll talk with you about them later, but yes, they also have jurisdiction here, and we can talk about that issue later. I'd rather... Okay, so...
Well,
I also want to share with you that what you just shared is not actually correct.
Okay.
Constitutional rights are not civil rights violations. That's number one. Number two, they can only investigate federal crimes. Okay, so that would have to be a violation of 18 U.S.C. 241 or 242, and that would have to apply to violations of the U.S. Constitution. And clearly, in my letter, I cited both violations of the California Constitution and the U.S. Constitution. Okay, so that being said, they can handle claims of federal constitutional issues and crimes per 18 U.S.C. 241 and 242. But... now we're talking about rights. We're talking about potential violations of California penal statutes and also violations of the California Constitution, which the FBI cannot enforce.
So that would be the state DOJ then?
Actually not. What actually happens is... If you go to the DOJ's website and you call the DOJ, they tell you to go make a report at your local law enforcement agency.
Okay.
So.
I'll be 100% honest with you. I'm not familiar with any examples of any local law enforcement agencies investigating any California Constitution violation.
I understand that. I don't have experience with that myself. But what I do know is that in my investigation experience, lawyers do not go this route to go after judges because it is career suicide. They are terrified of, I don't have a bar license and I don't have a business representing clients that I have to worry about going before all of these judges in the future. And they, of course, they all talk. So, and you know that, I mean, I'm not saying that their brotherhood is illegal, but there are certain things that a court has discretion to do, and they can ream your ass and make it very difficult if you mess with them. And these lawyers are very well aware of that, and, you know, they're just not going to do career suicide over it. Not for my case. If, you know, if we were talking about some trillion-dollar judgment that was the be-all, end-all for their career, and they were, you know, going to do a kamikaze dive through this thing, then maybe we'd see that. But that's not what's going on right now. So that's where we're at. So that's why, I don't know, maybe I can turn it back over to you to see if you had some other questions. That's why it's so important to go through and understand each of these issues that I brought up, because each of them go to whether the court had authority under the Constitution to do what it did.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I did. I did get an answer.
Case, through different routes, right? And they wouldn't rehear it. Is that correct?
Okay. Let me address the first thing. You said that I went to the Council of Judicial or Commission on Judicial Performance, and I didn't get an answer there. That's not correct. I did get an answer.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh,
no, I you didn't misremember, you just misstated a little bit. I did go to them, and I did get a response, but what they told me was, basically, they didn't think that there was any misconduct, and so they closed my case, and that is a bold-faced lie. The other issue with that is, and I could be wrong, I don't know about this, for 100% certain, but the Commission on Judicial Performance is an administrative agency. And I do not believe they cannot have under the Constitution full executive powers under Article 6, Section 1 to investigate criminal acts by judges. So what they investigate are things like judges drinking on the job, judges falling asleep on the bench, judges not showing up to work, that type of thing. So that's the point there. So the only other executive law enforcement agency in the state of California are police departments. There is no FBI of California. It's a police department. The police department has the duty to see that the law is faithfully executed. Period. No, he did not. No. So it wasn't me that sued the Humphreys. It was my company.
Okay.
My company was called the Spartan Associates, Inc., or Spartan Construction. I'll just call it Spartan for now, and you'll know what I mean. So the Humphreys didn't pay my company about 80 grand in materials and labor for the project. So my company sued them for the 80 grand, and then they cross-complained or cross-sued my company and me. Okay? So after that, right before trial, I ran out of money to keep paying Russo to represent me, and he chose to represent my company without charge. So I did not have counsel at trial. And again, because I know we haven't gone over why exactly this issue yet, but because I was criminally prosecuted, I have a right to have a appointed counsel, to a public defender. And the judge never told me that and never gave me a counsel. Okay, that's another major issue. The Supreme Court has repeatedly... Okay, so no, that's not what I'm saying. You're saying that my trial was civil, and I'm saying that it's not. In the same way that the damages were really disguising a very highly unconstitutional fine, the trial also disguised the fact that it was a criminal proceeding.
Okay, but so, I mean, that's confusing, right? You can't have it both ways.
No, the hell you can't. You can illegally conduct a trial and call it a civil proceeding and have all the makings of a civil proceeding, but it actually have it be a criminal proceeding in disguise. The way that would happen would be like this. Let's say, as outlandish as this is, it's exactly what happened in my case. Let's say that I knew my neighbor didn't have a driver's license. And so I filed a case in the Superior Court for 12500A, and I sued him for driving without a license, okay? In my case, it's contracting without a license. So then, let's say in Superior Civil Court, I sued him, and we went through the trial, and the judge said, okay, Mr. Neighbor, your fine is... $848,000 for driving without a license, pursuant to 12500 CVC. And so Mr. Neighbor goes, well, wait a minute. This is a penal statute of the vehicle code. This Adam guy can't prosecute me in a civil case for this. You have to have the district attorney bring these charges. And this is penal because I didn't cause any damages. I'm being fined $848,000 for driving without a license. And judge, moreover, where are you getting the authority to fine me $848,000 for driving without a license? It says right here in the book that the maximum fine is $250 for a first offense. Okay, so that was part of the fraud. So part of the fraud in this case is that the state of California has been, for the last 100 years, conducting these criminal trials under the disguise of civil trials. Okay, and I have not gone to law school to learn how to discern. Like, you can just tell right now the difficulty, you're having to face a very steep learning curve right now, and I'm explaining every issue to you. Take it now. Consider me coming straight out of the police academy, having very, you know, about 10 years of experience in law enforcement. I think you probably have 20 or something like that now. But consider that we have essentially similar levels of experience, and you were to be blindsided by something like this, and not have a freaking clue what was really going on. On top of that, thinking that, oh, the judges in the courts would never do something like this, you know, this can't be this. But then, after you realized something was terribly wrong, you had to put yourself through law school in your own way to figure out the fraud that was being perpetrated on you because you knew something was wrong. Like, let's just hypothetically say you were out contracting without a license. It would be fucking outrageous for you to be fined $850,000 for doing that. And then to then attach a lien on your house and force you into bankruptcy? I mean, you know, as like I said, you're a reasonable guy. You know that something is terribly wrong. And that's
like we talked about earlier, I'm approaching it with an open mind. There might be another explanation because I don't know what the Humphreys are alleging.
Well, that's what they allege, that I contracted without a license, and that as a result of... No, Darren. No. Here's the truth about the whole thing. We legitimately had a dispute over some of the things that are on the project. And those things are civil, and they require a civil trial to evidence whether damages were occurred or not. I do not dispute that all that is civil. Period. That's fine. That's not at issue here. But what happened before trial was they changed their complaint. They did what's called a first amended complaint, and they dropped all of their cross claims against my company. Well, they severed them. They didn't drop them. They severed them so that when we went to trial, the only issue was whether I was licensed or not. It was not an action against my company. It was an action exclusively against me to prosecute me criminally in a civil case and for them to get a total forfeiture of all the money that they paid both me and my company. That's what that...
Some of the civil things that they're saying against the company.
They said that my company damaged them, that I didn't do the work, that I messed up their job, that I charged them for things that they didn't get, that I took longer than I should have. Those are all civil. Yes. Yes. So they paid $848,000 for the job, and what that $848,000 was I don't even remember, but I'm just going to make up a number. Let's say that I spent $600,000 on materials and $200,000 on labor. So I gave them the $600,000 in materials, and I gave them, I supplied the labor, or my company did, to give them the value that they agreed upon with my company for the work they wanted. They wanted a custom home remodel, so that's what my company gave them. And then what happened is when we went to trial, essentially what the judge says was they get to keep the $848,000 that you already gave them, and you have to give them another
$848,000. Right.
Well, no. That there's a very big discernment there that we have to make clear.
You explained it to me, and I honestly can't repeat it back to you, but I'm starting to wrap my mind around the concept. Is this something that we can handle in mediation or arbitration?
Well,
because it clearly can be argued that they made back they've already got your investment and their property. What more do they need? I mean, we're trying to.
Well, let me just back up real quick, okay? If they go to court, what you said was, is it damages or punitive damages or a fine? I explained that discernment earlier. But if it was a damages issue, they have to go to court and prove that I harmed them and how much that costs. Like, let's say I put a wall where it didn't go, or I didn't build a wall properly, and I caused them $50,000 in damages. What they have to do is bring in an expert that says, look, I've been a construction foreman for 20 years, and I looked at what this guy did. He charged them $100,000 to build a wall that only cost $20,000 to make. Here's a picture of what he did. Here's a picture of how it's done right. And here's, I hired XYZ contractor to come in and fix what he did, and it cost the Humphreys $10,000 in damages. That's damages. So they presented evidence that I harmed them, And as a result, I have to pay them to recompense or to correct the damage that I did to them.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. So that's a great place to stop or to consider. And if that were the case, what they would have to do is make a civil claim for damages, and they say Adam didn't do X, Y, and Z, and here's our expert that shows what he didn't do and why he didn't do it and what he should have done, and that this cost us $848,000 to repair. None of that evidence appeared at trial. What they did is they said, we contracted with this guy, he's unlicensed, and he has to give us all our money back because of that. That's all that happened. Okay, so let me address the first thing you said. How does a police officer investigate a violation of constitutional rights? Did I get that right?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. I'm not trained in that.
Okay.
I don't know anybody who has on that. I've never seen that.
The same way that you investigate any other criminal activity. You interview the victim.
Yeah.
The victim tells you what happened, and you write a crime report. And you say that, you know, so-and-so alleged that X, Y, and Z rights were violated, and that's that. You do a report. I mean, it's the same thing as any other crime. Now, that's the point that the reason that I sent you the learning domain from the police academy, because it outlines in there very clearly that officers always have, they're bound to protect constitutional rights, and when an officer is made aware of, when somebody complains that their rights are being violated by another branch of government or by another executive branch officer, that the law enforcement has a duty to intervene and to investigate. Now, I don't know what that intervention may be. It may be first that you take a report of some kind and you put the facts together in your own mind to substantiate whether what I'm saying is legit or not. Another course of action I might recommend is for you to go to the city attorney and share that with him or her and see what perspective they have about the if you will, the merits of the case. Another thing could be to go talk with the Orange County Deputy DA and show them what's going on there. Now, the issue is, generally speaking, the DA has discretionary authority or discretionary power on whether or not to file charges or not. But that does not apply to constitutional rights violations, because constitutional rights aren't discretionary. It's not whether the government chooses to respect them. Okay, and so that's where well, I don't think we're stuck at all. I mean, based upon our, we've had two conversations now.
That's literally what you think versus what I think.
Okay, well, can I finish real quick? I was going to say that we've had two conversations, and it seems to me that, and I'm not saying that you're on my side, I'm just saying that it seems that you're getting a lot clearer about what really happened here during our conversations. Okay, and so I think the only thing missing is to share with you or point you in the direction of a source that could further illuminate you about how exactly what I'm saying is a very, very serious deprivation of constitutional rights. It's very serious. As you can see, I'm willing to put in the time and have the patience and whatever it needs to be able to bridge that gap so that we can work together, because it's my understanding of the law that you have a mandatory duty to intervene and investigate this. And I want to help you perform that duty. So you remember, like you said, this is like something that could occur in a movie. I want to be on the side of you being the hero and not in the defendant's table. So I'm here to help you and support you in doing your duty and doing your job and giving you everything that I can to support you in that way, in the way that I can. So whatever it needs to take, whether, you know, we need to keep meeting a couple more times or, you know, you can keep asking questions. I'm here and I'm willing to do that. Well, okay, so... Okay, so let's take a couple of pieces.
I gotta warn you, Mr. Berkey, I've got an appointment in 10 minutes.
Okay.
And I don't wanna seem like I'm cutting you off.
Okay. Do you wanna go in 10 minutes or do you wanna resume this tomorrow?
I'm not gonna be in the office tomorrow, Adam.
Okay. How agree with that. So, well, part of it. I don't think that we're going round and round. I feel that this is something that's very new to you, and that's understandable that we're having to work through some the education of some new things or getting familiar with some new things. And I do appreciate that you're taking the time to do that. So I don't feel like we're going round and round. I understand that you think that this was just a civil case that didn't go my way in my favor. And there's a big difference between being unhappy with the judgment. It's like a case of he said, she said. Someone can be unhappy. Okay, someone can be unhappy with the police officer's determination in a he said, she said situation. But there's a very big difference if the officer comes out and beats the person in violation of their constitutional rights. It's not the person... Okay, that's what I'm saying here. And what I'm saying might... Well, that's what, Darren, that's what courts use as authority. I had to tell you the constitutional... I had to give you... the provisions of the Constitution right? Article 1, Section 17, Article 1, Section 6, the Eighth Amendment, Article 1, Section 9. I had to give you those to show you what the law is on this situation. Okay.
Not every person can, even with the assistance of 10 different bits of case law, can see things your way on this one.
Well, okay.
So that's where I draw the line of crypto.
Okay. So let me address that really quick. Let's say, you know, a police officer obviously does not have authority to beat somebody unjustifiably. You have the right to use justifiable force, but not excessive force. Okay. So let's say that in the judge world of excessive force, the judge is authorized to order a fine up to a certain amount. Let's say that fine is $5,000. But the judge says, fuck that. I don't like this guy. He's getting $1 million fine. That's comparable to excessive force in law enforcement. It's the same thing. And that's why there's an excessive fines clause that says, look, judge, if you're going to give someone a fine, these are the criteria you have to follow. That's it. That's as simple as it is.
There's no remedy within the court system to address that issue.
Okay.
I find that hard to believe.
Darren, I will gladly show you that I have been to the Court of Appeal in Santa Ana, to the California Supreme Court, and to the Federal United States District Court, Central District of California in Santa Ana, and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. There's nowhere else to go.
So, 5 different courts of appeal have given you the same answer?
No. No, that's not true. That's not true. See, they have not given me the same answer. One court gave me that answer, and the other court said, we cannot do anything about this. Okay, there's state court and there's federal court. I went to the Court of Appeal after the Superior Trial Court, and they said that the trial court, what the Superior Court did was right. So then I went to the California Supreme Court, and they do not have to take your case. So they said, we don't want to take the case. All right. So then I went to federal court and I said, federal court, my federal rights are being violated. And they said, we do not have authority to overturn a judgment of a valid judgment of a California court. And that's it. So, and that in itself is another constitutional rights violation. But I just want to make it clear to you that I have not gone to 5 different courts and they all said the same thing. I went to trial and the judge made an egregious error and the appellate court made the same error. So there's a big difference there.
And then the next level wouldn't even take the case because it didn't have the merit.
No, that's not true. They did not rule on the merits. They didn't even examine the merits. They make a discretionary determination whether they want to take the case or not. They do not rule on the merits. So my case never, you present the case to them, but they don't make any ruling on it. So that there's a big difference between a court actually adjudicating something. It would be like this. A cop goes out to... Well, yes and no. If not, it's because they have 100 years of fining and abusing people. I mean, I can't even tell you how many millions of dollars have been awarded under this statute. I mean, it's insane. And to make an admission like that, almost every single judge would immediately be sued. The state of California would be sued. It's enormous.
To be honest, Adam, it sounds a little conspiracy theorizing.
That's fine, Darren, but here's the thing. I understand theoretically, yes, it could sound that way, but you said, you know, it's like you said to me, oh, you're having to prove your case with case law. That's what courts use to prove their authority. Just like in law enforcement, right? I'm sure in briefing, you guys get told about new cases that come down from the Supreme Court or from a higher California court, and the court says, look, when you're doing a search and seizure, you can't do this anymore, okay? That's case law. That's what the courts have said. That's the law. So that's why I'm... That's the point, Darren. But Darren, let's say that I made a complaint against an officer. And you're saying to me, Adam, that's not a crime. That's not a crime. And I said, Darren, look at the case law right here. The courts have said that an officer cannot do this type of search based upon these circumstances. And you're saying, whoa, you can't use case law to justify to me that the officer did something wrong. And I'm saying, yes, I can. This is what the court is saying the law is. And it's frankly, you know, I'm a little bit taken back that I sent you those rulings by the court to tell you exactly what the courts have said the law is on the situation that I'm saying. They're in my favor. No, no, Darren, read the cases. They're agreeing with me.
And why are you not successful in these arguments with the court?
I don't know.
That's not for me to decide, is my point.
It's not for you to decide, but if I am not getting a remedy from the courts or the legislature, and my rights are being violated, and my property is being taken from me without lawful authority, you are the third branch of government that I have to go to protect my rights and property. That's as simple as it is. I don't know why they're not doing what they're doing, but I can prove to you that they're not doing it right, that it's unconstitutional and possibly even criminal. And any one of those, you have a duty to investigate what I'm saying. It's easy. Okay.
I'll sit on this, I'll stew on it for the weekend. I'll be 100% honest with you. I really am struggling with finding a way to help you out. And I've given you several suggestions on how to get better help.
Darren, there is no help. You have not suggested to me any place to go to get help. Not one. What were those? Oh, okay, so that's not shooting you down. I actually did what you asked me to do. Yeah.
If I'm where the buck stops, I'm your last hope, and I can't help you, then that's where we are.
Okay, so before you go, what I'd ask is that you actually review the documents that I sent you, the case law, and you actually go to the Constitution and read what the Constitution says, and also...
That brings us back to the point of, if you were able to give me a crime, a legitimate crime in California, this would be a no-brainer. But we're arguing over whether or not your rights have been violated, and...
Darren, you're okay. So go on, maybe... Go this. What if you were to go to some of your partners at work there and ask them if a police officer has a duty to protect the constitutional rights of the citizens of California?
We do, if their rights are being violated.
Okay.
I'm still at the point where I'm not sure your rights have been violated.
Okay, and part of that is because you didn't read the materials that I sent you that the courts are saying the same thing that I'm saying. So if you read them, they will support what I'm saying and show you that that this is a violation of rights.
Okay. Adam, if I can carve out additional hours for you to go through the materials you sent me, then I will call you back and let you know if I'm in agreement with you or not. But yeah, honestly, I did not get around to reading these cases because they are upwards of 100 pages.
I don't remember them being that, but okay.
So, I gotta go. If anything comes up, you have my number. Feel free to reach out. Otherwise, I will contact you if I can come up with something, okay?
So what you're saying to me is, unless I hear from you, you're not going to do anything. But you are going to, if you feel like it, maybe look at what I sent you. Is that correct? I don't want to put words into your mouth. I want to be clear about what you're saying.
You're putting words in my mouth because you're saying if I feel like it. I said if I can.
Okay.
So, yeah, and at the very least, like I told you, I can have you, or you can write something out for me that I can attach to a incident number that gets sent to the state DOJ.
Well,
that's the very least I
can do. Check out that learning domain that I sent you. It's the book from the Basic Police Academy. It says it right in there. Well, it's not just over my head. I'm being forced into bankruptcy and potentially foreclosure.
Right, and I would argue that that's not the same as it being in progress.
I don't know what else it could be.
Well, it's not that. So,
well, double check.
Like I said, I'm 5 minutes out of my appointment now. I didn't want to be rude, but I've got to go.
Oh, okay, that's fine. So I guess I'll wait to hear from you. Is that where we're at now? Okay, so I'm going to, if I come up with something, I'm supposed to contact you, but if I don't have anything else, I'm not supposed to contact you. I'm supposed to wait to hear from you. Is that correct?
Yeah, or if you want to talk about this more, reach out to me. I'm here for you still.
I do. So feel free to call.
I can't, feel free to call is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you for your time, Darren. I'll call you next week. Okay.
Bye-bye.